Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, the big news this past week in training camp, three players come off the PUP list, tight end Jared Cook, wide receiver Ty Montgomery, and linebacker Sam Barrington. And if you talk about making a strong first impression on Packers fans, Jared Cook, those first couple of practices, wow.
Unbelievable, Mike. And it was one of those things that he made a few plays in the seam right off the bat at the start of practice, and you're like, okay, nice. This guy can play. But it wasn't just one series or one drive. It was something that from the first whistle to the final horn, he was making plays all over the place. And I don't want to sit here and fuel up the hype train after one practice, but it was remarkable just seeing his body type and what he was able to do with it. Now, again, it's not a regular season setting. You don't have live bullets flying in the secondary. But I thought, especially and particularly in the red zone, Jared Cook looked like the real deal.
Yeah, what impressed me the most is for the limited amount of time, really, overall, that he's gotten with Aaron Rodgers. They had a stretch of the offseason and then some of the OTAs before Cook left for that foot surgery. But the fact that he was making the adjustments down the seam to catch the back shoulder throws, you know, he's running one way, spinning the other way to make the grab. That kind of stuff you would think would take more time with a brand new quarterback, and he was doing it right away.
He was, I think that goes to show a little bit, you know, the work he put in when he first got to Green Bay. I remember those conversations we had with him at the start of organized team activities. He got in here, well, even before he got here, he was already texting and calling with Aaron Rodgers. He got in here, and he immediately was putting in that work with them. And even though he did miss, you know, the mini camp and the first week and a half of training camp, you could still see what that did for him in terms of being ready and acclimated. And he was asked about this too, like if he felt like he had to come in that first practice and really impress his teammates. He didn't look at it like that, but he did say it obviously feels good to start that way and to be able to build off of that performance.
Yeah, and we talked to him, a group of reporters talked to him at his locker after Wednesday's practice, and this is a guy who he can't hide the smile on his face. He couldn't be more excited to be here and to be in an offense that is going to feature the tight end. We know that when there's a tight end of this caliber, Mike McCarthy will feature him. This is a big part of what the Packers are going to do. And the fact that he's got Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback. Now, Cook didn't want to disparage any of the other quarterbacks he's worked with, but we've talked about this before. He has never played with anybody throwing in the ball the caliber of Aaron Rodgers. And anytime he talks about Rodgers, he just gets this big smile on his face. He said, look, the only way I'm going to put it is Aaron is in a league of his own, and catching passes from him is just different.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was kind of echoed a little bit during our assistant coach's availability. Ben Sermons, who's the running backs coach now for the Packers, was with St. Louis the last 4 years and did actually get a chance to work with him a little bit, not obviously coaching him, but seeing him on the field. And he echoed the same thing in that there was nothing wrong with any of the Rams quarterbacks. He wasn't going to throw anybody under the bus. But you have to understand, I think everybody does, is just that Aaron Rodgers is the 1%. I mean, the 1% of the 1%. And now that Jerry Cook has a chance to work with him, you know, even though he has 7-8 years under his belt, this is an opportunity to come in now and really capitalize on it. I thought for one practice he really showed up.
Yeah, and a guy on a 1-year contract who has all the incentive in the world to really light it up for his new team. So Ty Montgomery coming back from a long layoff. He'd been out since mid-October of last year. Tried several times during the fall to get back into practice last season to do some more with his rookie season, which got off to such a promising start, but then ultimately had to opt for surgery on the ankle, and he came back looking no worse for wear as well.
I thought he had a really good story that he told you, and I think Jared Cook kind of corroborated it. Those two guys both were going through some tough times there. Montgomery had been out for a significant amount of time. Jared Cook wants to make a positive first impression. They kind of leaned on each other from the get-go, and the fact that they were able to sort of support one another and then actually get activated the same day.
Yeah, the exact same day.
Was pretty poetic. But for Montgomery, it's been a long process for him. He gets injured in week 6 against San Diego, tries to get back without the surgery, ultimately determines that he needs it in December, And it was. He missed the offseason program, but the fact that he's able to get back on the field now with four preseason games ahead, I think that is going to be something that could really help him in a really tight wide receiver competition.
Yeah, and he showed up right away, too. We saw him in the red zone. You talked about the touchdowns that Cook had. There was a real bullet throw from Rodgers right down the hash marks, and Montgomery had to leave his feet, jumped up there, you know, snagged it, brought it in, came crashing to the turf, and, you know, you're kind of like, wow, you wouldn't expect that from a guy who hadn't been on the practice field since October. And again, another guy who almost couldn't hide the smile on his face. He was so happy to be back. And I thought another key point from Ty was he talked about how even for as long as he'd been out, he wasn't running around out there thinking about his ankle, thinking about the injury. He's like, hey, I was thinking about the defense. I was running my route. And if he's already past that mental part as far as getting over the injury, he's in a good spot.
Absolutely, Mike. And that's one thing, too, that when I watched him in that first practice, as good as Jared Cook looked, what really stuck out to me, Montgomery, even more than the catches, he just looked confident. And yeah, we saw him so many times last year trying to practice on that ankle and get back on the field. Just didn't quite look right. He looked assured of himself and what he needed to do on the field, and I thought if he could put that behind him now, that kid has a very high ceiling in front of him.
Yeah, real quickly then, also the third player coming off PUP, linebacker Sam Barrington, coming back at almost the right time in the sense with Jake Ryan being out with for a little while here with a hamstring injury. And you talked to Barrington in the locker room the other day about how much he's leaned down, lost weight, kind of a reshaped his body a little bit.
Played last year at 247. After the injury, he was off his feet, went up to 258. Now, basically since December till now, has lost 22 pounds, plans to play around 238 this season, looked more mobile, and is still extremely aggressive. And I think that's something that when people talk about trying to improve the run defense, he's going to be a key factor in that.
Yeah, he showed up right away in that half-line drill when you talk about the
setting the tempo,
aggression against the run. So interesting to see how the inside linebacker snaps will shake out between Martinez, Ryan, and Barrington as we go forward. So with that, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, as we head into the first preseason game against the Browns, for those who may be watching a tape-delayed version of the show, this was recorded before the Cleveland game, the opening preseason game. The installation phase of training camp is over. The playbook is in. Offense, defense, special teams, they've installed everything. Now the transition will be to more the game preparation. Excuse me. So through the installation phase of training camp, offensive side of the ball, who jumped out to you?
The guy who jumped out the most to me, Mike, is the same guy who has not participated through an entire installation phase yet in two previous NFL seasons, and that's Jared Aberderis. And for him to come out and make as many plays as he has, I'm not looking at the guys number 3 through 8 on the depth chart at receiver. I'm not looking at the receiver position, offense, defense. I think Jared Aberderis has had as good of a training camp so far as anybody on this roster. He's come out, he's made the tiptoe catches, he's done everything he's needed to do to show that he is worthy of a roster spot. Let's keep in mind here, even though he played some important snaps last year, the guy's never made the active roster yet. He went on IR as a rookie, and then last year missed most of camp and then started the season on the practice squad. I asked Luke Getsy about that and how important these snaps are right now, and he said this is critical. For him, not only to have the performance he's getting, but just to be able to go through these repetitions is really a benefit he hasn't had the last few years.
Yeah, and you see there's definitely a determination there. I think he's a pretty excited guy that he's stayed healthy to this point in camp and been able to take the number of snaps that he has. You talked about it. He's never made it through an entire installation phase, and that's only going to help in terms of the knowledge of the offense, the chemistry with Aaron Rodgers, all of that.
Yeah, he's always been playing from behind the eight ball here. So for him to come out and get these snaps right away and really make the most of those opportunities, as I know, as cliche as that can sound, this is critical, especially at a position where there's going to be as much competition through these preseason games. He needed a fast start.
Yeah, and another couple of guys on offense that I thought have gotten off to solid starts, nothing spectacular, so to speak, but Eddie Lacy and James Starks. It really looks to me like the Packers are going to be back to that 1-2 combination in the backfield that was so effective in 2014. And when you talk about what both of those guys have done in terms of adding to their resume, to their weaponry, so to speak, on offense, what they've done in the receiving game the last couple years, combined with some of the explosiveness they've shown running the ball, certainly Lacy looking trimmer and everything like we talked about, I think the Packers' backfield, if those top two guys can stay healthy, it's setting up pretty well.
There were a lot of storylines last year that got kind of played out throughout the course of seasons with the backfield, but I thought one of the ones that sort of went under the radar was the improvements that James Starks made both as a pass protector and also as a receiver. And he said going into last year, even though he was 29 years old and had 5-6 seasons under his belt already, it was critical. It was important for him to become that three-down running back that the Packers always felt he could be, and he just had to work at it. He knows he's not the best pass protector in the world. He knows that he's not the best and most natural pass catcher, but I thought the strides he made last season had a lot to do with some of the things the Packers were able to do offensively when maybe some of the more consistent parts of the offense weren't clicking like usual.
Yeah, the Packers definitely relied on James Starks. They turned to James Starks in that screen game a lot last year when, as you say, some of the other things in the offense weren't clicking, and I think that's going to be an important part when you combine hopefully getting Jordy Nelson back, Jared Cook being thrown into the mix like we talked about. This Packers offense, I think, is headed back to where it was in 2014. Not to say that Aaron Rodgers is going to win the MVP again. He certainly might, but the offense as a whole, if all of these guys are healthy, I just don't see how you can have a repeat of 2015.
I agree. And the one thing, too, to build off of is when you look at Starks, just my first impressions watching him in camp, looks as explosive as he ever has. And Eddie Lacy, particularly in those half-line drills, to me, looks like a really violent runner right now. So I'm interested to see these. I don't know how much work they're going to get in the preseason, but together, that's been a really good combination here for the Packers the last three seasons.
Yeah, I would agree. And we'll shift gears and talk about the defense after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. Flipping sides to defense here, Wes, through the installation phase of training camp. Who's jumped out at you?
Blake Martinez, the rookie from Stanford, fourth-round pick. He was really, I don't want to use the word anointed, although that's the only one that's coming to mind right now, but he was allowed to use the communication helmet last week. They finally made that decision, what they were going to do with that. It's a little bit different this year, Spoff. They no longer need like a communicator in between Dom Capers and the linebacker with the communication helmet. Last year, that was Winston Moss. Now Dom can communicate directly with some of the changes.
So from upstairs, he can talk to him directly on the field.
He can go right to Blake Martinez. So okay. It's a really fun thing that happened this first week of practice in that you have Dom Capers, 65 years old, you know, all this time that he spent in the NFL, the first time communicating directly with a rookie inside linebacker. When I was talking with Martinez a little bit, he mentioned how he was kind of playing games with Dom a little bit during one practice, saying, "I can't hear you. I can't hear you," just sort of messing with him a little bit. And Dom also brought up a story where, in one case, he called in a play, and Martinez ended up running a different one. So I don't know if there was some hairs getting crossed there or if he took the signal from the sideline. But there's been those little funny hiccups. But all things considered, I thought Martinez has come in, really showed and demonstrated his ability to communicate in that defense. Sam Barrington, upon returning, also said that he's the best guy he's ever been next to in terms of communication. And I think that's really high praise for a guy that just stepped in the door.
Yeah, no surprise that he's picked up the scheme as quickly as he has coming from Stanford. He's a smart guy. He processes things fast.
And it's a similar scheme. There's some yeah, things in there that are very similar that I think can help that transition.
Yeah, and he spent the time studying. We've talked about that before, how we see him in the locker room and he's on the tablet, you know, always studying, figuring things out. I'll talk about another rookie that I think has jumped out as well, and that's Kenny Clark. You watch the one-on-one pass rush, pass blocking drills, and I know you've watched those a little bit more than I have because maybe I'm running around taking pictures for Twitter.
You're doing the busy work.
Yeah, but you're charting all those, and every time I walk over to you afterwards and say, who stood out in the one-on-one pass rush, and you say, Kenny Clark. And
yeah.
The, you know, the leverage you've written about, the wrestling background and all of that. He's not a tall defensive lineman, so he uses that leverage. He gets under people's pads. He's active with his hands, all of that. He doesn't, to me, look like a rookie in the trenches. And as a 20-year-old guy now, we'll just have to see how he holds up.
One of the things defensive line coaches always talk about is you want to have your hands up. It's like a boxer, right? If you put them down, you're going to leave yourself open. It is amazing watching Clark in these one-on-ones, how active he is, how violent he is with those hands. And I think that's something that not only can help avoid getting, you know, offensive linemen locking into him, but also seems to use that to his advantage in terms of slipping by guys. One-on-ones, there's only so much that can be gleaned. The coaches talk about how everybody's trying to work on different things. But for a guy that's come in as a rookie, I think he's made a really big statement in those drills.
Yeah, and we've talked before about how the Packers are going to need him to play right away, and all indications are he will be there. Now, you've talked to me about another guy on defense, not a rookie, that that has stood out to you in the pass rush part of things as well.
Yeah, this is time for the Lorente McCray portion of Packers Unscripted. And the thing I think sometimes gets forgotten, everybody looks at Jared Cook. The Packers actually signed another outside free agent this offseason in Lorente McCray, who, by the way, won a Super Bowl in February with the Denver Broncos. McCray is an outside linebacker, about 6'3", 255, 260-ish, has some special teams acumen. But what's really impressed me is his bull rush in these pass rush drills. He hasn't won every single one of them. I mean, it's not like he has this amazing record or anything, but it's amazing to me how physical he is and how much push he can get at the point of attack. If you're looking for one guy to follow throughout the preseason, I think Lorente McCray is a guy to keep your eye on.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. And the Packers have a lot of options at outside linebacker. We've talked about that before, the different skill sets, the different body types. Kyler Fackrell, a lot of fans asking about what's going on with the third-round pick. We haven't seen a whole lot of, you know, standout plays, a few flashes here and there from Fackrell, but it looks like the Packers can maybe bring him along, look at him as a developmental prospect, and they don't need him to play right away necessarily, like with Kenny Clark and Blake Martinez. And a guy like McCray gives the Packers another option as a pass rusher that maybe they don't have to rush Fackrell along.
Huge credit to Ted Thompson, that scouting department. For a number of years, my first few years on the beat, the Packers were always in a situation where they're playing undrafted free agents, rookies, next to Clay Matthews, across from Clay Matthews. The depth that they have that position right now, that's a testament to the way they develop those guys and how far they can go into that depth, that bench. And one more thing about Fackrell, did have a really nice pressure in practice on Wednesday to help force an interception during a team period, a two-minute period. So he doesn't have to come along right away. I think he understands that, and that's one of the benefits to how they've constructed this roster.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, with that, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with one final segment on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, final segment today. Let's talk about the preseason schedule as a whole. The Packers have four preseason games, started with five on the schedule before the cancellation of the Hall of Fame game. Now, the NFL, back in 1978, switched from six preseason games to four. If you can believe that, they actually used to play six preseason games, and training camp was almost a couple months long, I think, back then. But so almost 40 years of playing four preseason games, do you think this is going to continue, or are we on the verge of potentially a change in the number of preseason games that are played?
Well, obviously, I'm a staff writer. I'm not an executive. I don't know all the financial things that go into these decisions. What I will say is that I could see a day where it continues to get reduced, whether that goes to two or whether that's three. I think that's going to happen, just with the terms of the emphasis on player safety. I have no problem with the Hall of Fame game. I think it's a really good tradition. I still wonder if that could just be absorbed into one of the four games.
See, I agree there. I think if they're going to continue to play the Hall of Fame game, which I think they should.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's a nice kickoff to the summer, to the preseason. But it doesn't need to be a fifth preseason game for teams. If you're going to stick with four, then let it be one of the four.
And you have preseason games going on every night of the week, it seems like, during the I mean, you got Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays. Make it the first game, you know, and then maybe have the next games played the next day. It could still be national. That's just the way I feel. I just feel like five is too much. But as to the point of four, though, there still is something to be had out of these games. And I'm not talking about Aaron Rodgers and the first team offense, you know, getting into a rhythm.
Right.
This is the closest thing a lot of guys are going to have to playing in the NFL and making that dream come true. And that's one of the things I feel is the strongest components of the National Football League is the stakes are so high, Mike. And this is their shot to show it. A lot of these guys will sign a rookie contract as an undrafted free agent, and it'll be the only contract they sign professionally. And I really value those times, that those reps, those snaps, those games, that those guys can show what they can do.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's why I think if there is a change maybe coming down the road at some point, I think it will only drop to three. I think if they drop it to two, I think you'd have coaches saying, we're not going to get enough of a look at these rookies and trying to select the roster, pick, you know, make those last few roster decisions off of two preseason games while also still spending some of that time getting your first string offense and your first string defense ready to play the regular season. I think four games is probably more than enough. Three games is maybe the right balance. Now, of course, you run into, if there's three, then every year two on the road, one at home, and you flip back and forth, and it gets difficult scheduling-wise. But I think three is maybe the happy medium if they decide to make a change.
One change I like that McCarthy's made these last couple years is he seems to be playing his starters and the core guys earlier in the preseason. You know, Aaron Rodgers, I think, played in the first two games last year, then took off the next two. That does allow you that if there is – now, you want to avoid the Jordy Nelson situation, but it does allow you, if you have just any nicks and bruises at camp, they can get in there, they can get the timing down, and give you time to heal up. I did like that adjustment that McCarthy made the last 2 years.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, well, that's a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com, on Twitter. He's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. At Packers is the team account. Thanks for watching, everybody, and we'll see you next time.